Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday morning. It's February 11th. Currently, we've got 32 degrees and snow falling. Glad to see that it still can. 35 degrees with kind of a rain-snow mixed in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Wednesday. We've got a mountain winter storm moving in, but primarily for friends above 7,000 feet or so as we go throughout the day. But either way, let's talk about your forecast. We're going to be seeing off and on periods of rain and snow mixed during the first half of the day. We'll get a break, and then more rain will be likely in the afternoon hours, with temperatures will be warming up. Could even have a couple of isolated rumbles of thunder. As we go throughout the day, there's a chance that we could pick up a half inch or less of snow in the Park City area, but otherwise the Heber Valley looking at mostly rain with just a few snowflakes mixed in first half of the day. Again, we warm up into the 40s this afternoon, so anything that does fall will change over to rainfall as we get into the afternoon hours. As we go into your forecast for tonight, again, we'll see those temperatures that will dip down to around or slightly below freezing, so that means we'll continue that chance of a rain-snow mix in the Heber Valley, but we could see that precipitation switch back over to snow in the Park City area. We could be looking at a rain-snow mix in Park City as we go throughout your Thursday as well, but overall mostly again looking at liquid precipitation with this event, as it is an atmospheric river which brings in that warmer air. Now, as we go into your holiday weekend, the good news is we dry things out, so your Valentine's Day weekend, we'll call it partly cloudy skies. On your Friday in Park City, highs in the low 40s, upper 40s for the Heber Valley. As we get into your Valentine's Day itself, well, looking pretty good. It's going to be a cold start with temperatures in the teens in the Heber Valley on Saturday morning, low 20s in Park City, but we'll warm into the mid-40s in Park City by the afternoon hours Saturday with highs near 50 in the Heber Valley. By your Sunday, we'll start off with sunshine, clouds on the increase late in the day. Temperatures warm up into the mid-40s in Park City, highs in the low 50s in the Heber Valley. Now, next week, we've got a more significant pattern change on the way. It looks to remain very active with multiple storm systems, and they tend to get colder. So we may start off with a rain-snow mix on Monday. By the time we get towards Tuesday, snow is looking likely across the Wasatch Back. That's your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And with a look in the backcountry, on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, it's Brooke. Good morning, Brooke.
Good morning, Leslie. Yeah, we're at moderate danger on upper and mid-elevation slopes today, and that's with this atmospheric river that we just talked about. We'll see some new snow up in the mountains, definitely some rain down low, but we're mostly concerned about how that snow is interacting with the wind. The wind will load it into some fresh slabs near ridgelines and on mid-elevation slopes, and that's most of what we'll be looking out for today. It'll fall on some weaker snow on those more polar aspects and be able to break a bit wider and farther.
Okay, Brooke, thank you. Well, stay tuned. Coming up this morning on the local news hour, I'll be checking in with Captain Nicholas Friccioni about details about the 10th Mountain Division 2026 90-pound rucksack challenge and how you can participate. From the Althingen Ski Museum, Director Annie Balmer is joined by the Director of Visitor Experience and Exhibits at Swanner Preserves and Eco Center, Hunter Klingensmith, with details on some watch parties and the Ski with a Scientist event. And later on, National Ability Center CEO Willie Ford is joined with Park City Mountain to tell us more about the upcoming Ski-a-thon fundraiser. And finally, from the Heber Valley Chamber, Public Relations Manager Jessica Turner with a preview of some upcoming events. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include Dr. Nicole McNichols. She'll break down an unexpected quiet shift among Gen Z that, along with far less drinking and smoking, they're also having less sex. Then cult survivor scholar and former Army intelligence officer Daniela Mestianek Young discusses her new book, The Culting of America. If you're part of a charismatic company culture, fitness program, church, or political movement, you may be invested far more deeply than you realize. All of that coming up on today's edition of The Mountain Life, heard, of course, every Wednesday at 9 a.m. The 90-pound rucksack challenge is coming to Park City, and in the studio with details, I have Captain Nicholas Friccioni to tell us more about that. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so you're a captain in the Army?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, okay. So tell us, what is the 90-pound rucksack challenge?
So to sum it up, nice, short, and sweet, it's a ski mountaineering challenge that is hosted every year on February 18th. at several resorts across the United States now and at different backcountry locations. And the point of it is to honor the legacy of the 10th Mountain Division's service in World War II and also their contributions to American skiing and the American outdoor recreation industry post-war.
So why is February 18th significant?
So that is the day of their seminal action in World War II, which was the assault on Riva Ridge in Italy.
Okay. So is this something relatively new?
Yeah. So it was started 3 years ago. This is the third year of the event by a man named Christian Beckwith. He is a climbing historian out of Jackson Hole who started this whole rabbit hole of making the, he has a podcast about the history of the 10th and specifically their impact on the American outdoor recreation industry. And is going to be turning into a book once he finishes his research. But he is the one who started this whole event and the whole research project. And the reason he got into it at all, interestingly enough, is he was looking through the summit history, the summit logbook of the Grand Teton, and noticed that basically from 1939 until 1946, there were no entries. And he thought, why did that happen? And it's because every climber in the United States who had the ability to climb the Grand Teton was in the 10th.
Wow. Okay. So is it a fundraiser? Does it benefit somebody? Or
it's completely free. It's mostly just to raise awareness of the 10th and their legacy, and to just honor the service that they made during World War II and after.
Okay. So tell us, how does it work? Because Park City Mountain actually kind of came on late to this.
Yes, so thank you for their support, but they have agreed to be a host resort. So the way it works is you register on Christian Beckwith's website, which is just christianbeckwith.com, where you can search 90-pound rucksack challenge and you'll find it. You just put in some information, you'll register to come there, and then it's at 7 p.m. local time on Wednesday, February 18th. 7 p.m. it happens across the country that way because that was when the 10th Mountain Division started their action at Riva Ridge. And then you climb between 1,500 to 2,500 feet of vert, and then you ski down. And you can do it with as much weight as you want. It's either no weight, some weight, what you normally carry. If you really want to challenge yourself, carry as much weight as you can. Particularly at Park City, it is going to be 1.5 to 2 laps of the uphill route to the angle station. We'll hit the vertical requirement.
Okay, so why is carrying 90 pounds so central to honoring the 10th Mountain Division legacy?
So that is what they were famous for within themselves when they were training, particularly when they were still an infantry regiment before they became a full-fledged division. They were training at Mount Rainier at Paradise, and regularly their loads of equipment that they carried were over 90 pounds. And that became such a hallmark for them that they wrote their own song about it and kept singing it throughout the war. And that's why Mr. Beckwith decided to name his whole podcast and research about it as well.
Okay. So they do need to register. There'll be some kind of check-in point at the base of Park City. Some liability, I'm guessing, you need to sign and then just start climbing?
Yes, there'll be two waivers. One's just a general waiver for 90-pound rucksack challenge, and then Park City has another one just for their specific one. But we'll meet up around 6:30 at the first time lot, and the event will start at the first time base right by the lift. We'll explain how everything's going to work, say a few words about why we're here, what the tent did, and the reason for us coming out, and then start it right after that. And I know Park City will also provide some medical coverage. There'll be a couple patrollers there in case of any emergencies.
Okay. So to you, I mean, as somebody serving in the military, why do you think it's important to keep the history of the 10th Mountain Division alive through physical challenges like this rather than just kind of ceremonies and...
I think that nothing can put you more into the shoes of the men and what they did more than experiencing in some way the physical challenges of what they had to overcome. I did it myself last year at Park City, just carrying 90 pounds up the uphill track, and it was the second most physically challenging thing I've ever done in my entire life, and it left me broken. And I just could not imagine doing that with wooden skis, mohair skins if you were lucky, and a leather knapsack, and just a lot of grit.
Okay.
Particularly at Riva Ridge, why I think it's important to remember that is the Germans that they were fighting had considered that terrain impassable. So it was lightly or undefended completely. So not only did they accomplish something that their adversaries thought was impossible, but they did it so successfully that they took the ridge and won their battle without any casualties whatsoever. And it says something, you know, that you were able to climb 1,500 to 2,500 feet, you know, and about 5,000 soldiers. And over into the cover of darkness at night with 1940s climbing equipment, which up until that point did not exist in the United States. One of the more interesting things that Christian goes into in his podcast is skiing had existed as an industry in the U.S., particularly since the 20s. Climbing really didn't. There were probably less than 1,000 recreational climbers in the United States when the 10th Mountain was formed. And interestingly enough, all the companies that made climbing equipment were either Swiss, German, French, or Italian. So they're either Axis powers, neutral, so they couldn't get access to the equipment, or had been defeated. So a big part of what they had to do in preparation for fielding the division was to research, design, and then create the industrial processes en masse for making good, usable climbing equipment that was really implemented for the first time during the war. And then that, because that existed, and then it all went into surplus after the war, it really laid the groundwork for climbing specifically in the outdoor recreation industry post-war.
Wow. So you are part of the Skimo, I guess, tribe, you know, that you come and do uphill travel. Are you kind of practicing for this, given kind of your experience last time?
Yes. If you ever see anybody with a camouflage backpack on that looks like it weighs a lot, that's probably me. I've been trying to do that the last couple of weeks to really get ready, but not much can prepare you too much for having 90 pounds on your back for that long.
Yeah, so what is it? Just weight? What do you put in? Just sandbags? Or
it's mostly just my equipment from being a soldier. I try to pack as much of that in there, and then once I max that out, I just try to find heavy stuff that I can fit in the bag.
Okay, so again, anybody's welcome. They don't have to carry 90 pounds if they just want to come out and learn a little bit more. Show up 6:30 there, first time lock, Wednesday, February 18th, 6:30?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, anything else you want to mention?
I'll just mention as well, the Mountain West Army Recruiting Battalion will have a table set up there. If anybody wants to learn a bit about joining the Army, either enlisted in the Army Reserve, going to OCS to become an officer, or even becoming a warrant officer and being a pilot, those recruiters will be there to answer any of your questions. It'll be great to see anybody who comes out to support it. I'm really looking forward to it, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. Again, thanks for your service. No, that's Captain Nicholas Friccioni, again, with the 90-pound rucksack challenge coming to Park City Mountain. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. There's a lot going on at the Utah Olympic Park and Althangan Ski Museum, as well as a partnership with the Swanner Preserve and Eco Center. In the studio with details, I have the director of the museum and Annie Balmer, along with the director of visitor experience and exhibits at Swanner, Hunter Klingensmith. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So first, Annie, maybe just kind of give us an overview. What have you got happening at the museum these days?
Yes, so we are full in swing with the Olympics happening, 2026 Milano Cortina. And this weekend, actually, we are going to be doing a weekend watch party where we will be doing kids crafts from 11 to 4, all kinds of sports-themed crafts. We'll also be making Team USA friendship bracelets that you can wear and share. And then on the 13th and 14th, so Friday, Saturday, from 11 to noon, Shannon Barkey will be coming and doing a workout with an Olympian event with us. So it is for all ages, all abilities. Anyone is welcome. It won't be anything too crazy, but if you ever have wanted to work out with an Olympian, now is your chance. Come up to the park. Everyone is welcome. No registration required. Just show up at 11 o'clock on Friday and Saturday.
Okay, and in terms of your exhibits, anything new to report?
Yeah, we actually do have an exhibit that is talking about the juxtaposition between the 1956 and the 2026 Olympics, because they were both held in Cortina. We have an opening ceremonies jacket on display from Marv Melville and one from Dick Mitchell, who were both on the 1956 Olympic downhill skiing team. And one of the fun things about these coats is they were originally white. They look very similar to the 2026 coats that you saw in the opening ceremonies this year. However, the men didn't really like them that they were white, and a lot of them dyed them blue. So Marv kept his white and Dick dyed his blue. So we have both of those on display, and you can come and see the differences between the two. And then we talk about the venues and the athletes and what the differences are between the two games. So come and check that out. It'll be on display through the Olympics and Paralympics.
Okay. And the museum is still free?
Still free. We are open 7 days a week from 9 to 6. So come stop by.
Okay. What's visitation been like this winter? I think you get upwards of what, 500,000?
Yeah.
Visitors every year?
Yeah, we get about 500,000 visitors. And with the unfortunate lack of snow that we've had, a lot of people are coming into the museum to check things out, just looking for something to do. So especially December, we had a huge uptick of visitation. We were hitting record numbers at our museum, so it's been a really great winter for us, unfortunately, with the lack of snow.
Yeah. Now, these collections, I mean, like the two coats, I mean, are those now the museum property, or are they just, like, get loaned to you? Is that how does it work?
So those were actually both donated to us. John Mitchell, Dick's son, donated the blue coat to us quite a while back, and then last year we got Marv's coat as well. So they are both owned by the museum. One of the fun things, though, we did actually loan Marv back his coat. He's still alive, and he was doing a bunch of interviews about it, and he got to wear his coat again for some of these interviews and kind of have the memories. But we do own it now, and we have a lot of things from the 56 Olympics that we didn't realize that we had that we've got over the years. So it's been fun to pull those out.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Again, the watch party's happening this weekend, mm-hmm. 11 to 4. And then Hunter, on February 25th, the Swanner Preserve and Eco Center planning a ski with a scientist. This is going to happen at the Utah Olympic Park. So tell us about this.
Yeah, so we had the privilege to partner with the Alfingen Ski Museum and Annie and Maddie to do an exhibit that's currently on display at the visitor center just at the bottom of the hill. And that talks about snow and snow in Utah and skiing and climate change and how it's anticipated to affect it. It's based on some USU studies, and one of the studies that it's based on is done in partnership with the assistant professor in watershed sciences, Dr. Scott Hodeling. He studies global change biology at high altitudes, and he does some really cool research about how we can adapt for climate change. He works with interns in this climate adaptation internship program to create these climate adaptation stewards that will grow into the profession. And so we'll have a chance to hopefully go uphill with him at Utah Olympic Park. We are asking that people have experience doing uphill skiing, so you have to have your own equipment. And then we'll come back down and we'll have some pizza and we'll head into the museum, have some pizza and some refreshments, and we'll get a chance to hear from Scott about what the current state of climate change in Utah is, what we're looking at in high mountains, and hopefully some hopeful information, especially because this year we are seeing the impacts of a changing climate, and we are expected to see more rain and less snow for precipitation. So I think learning about what we can do and how we can get involved in trying to, protect our snow that we love and depend on here. This is a great opportunity for that, and it should be a fun way to get outside, move around a bit, and then hang out with a cool scientist.
Okay. So is there an easy way down?
We actually haven't. I haven't gone and tested it yet, but I believe that it is like intermediate terrain that we'll be on. So I would say if you're not comfortable going uphill and then coming down on something intermediate, you're welcome to come and meet us for the talk with Scott afterwards. You don't have to do the uphill ski portion, and we're happy to have you for that part.
Okay, so when are you meeting again?
We're meeting at 5:30, and we'll meet in the museum, and then we'll make sure everyone has their waivers filled out, get ready to go out, and then we'll go out with Scott, and we'll have a set turnaround time that we'll come back, and we're anticipating that the talk will take place at 7:30 with a little bit of time for refreshments and mingling beforehand.
Okay, tickets are free, but you do need to register?
Yeah, we do need registration just so that we know how many people are planning to come, and I can let you jump in there too, Annie, if you have any other comments on that. But yeah, hoping that people register. You can register for the uphill and the talk, or just the talk, whatever you feel most comfortable with.
Okay, and again, it includes pizza and soft drinks.
Pizza, yeah, and some snacks, yeah.
Okay, all right. Anything else you guys wanted to mention?
I think go to the, if you're going to the visitor center, you're going by there, you're going to go and get a cup of coffee at Hugo. Take a minute to check out the exhibit that we worked on. It'll be there all year or through the ski season. And it has some fun interactives too. You can like drop a ball into a fun Plinko board that helps you to understand precipitation falling as snowpack versus as rain, because we depend on about 95% of our water sources come from snowpack here in Utah. So.
Okay, so this is interesting. So this is kind of an off-site exhibit that Swanner's done.
Swanner and Alvingen, we partnered on this one. So it's we love having a partner to work with, and it'll be fun to have it up there in the center.
Okay, and that's kind of part of that, just you don't have room in your own places.
pretty much,
And a cool opportunity, to reach new people, for sure.
Awesome. Okay, ladies, thanks.
Thank you so much.
That's Annie Balmer with Alvingen Ski Museum and Hunter Klingensmith with Swanner Nature Preserve and Eco Center. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Dozens of Summit County residents appeared virtually in court yesterday to see if they'll be on the jury for a highly anticipated murder case. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the Corey Richens trial has drawn national attention to the Wasatch Back.
One by one, residents from across Summit County popped up on a 3rd District Court video screen Tuesday for the first day of jury selection as Corey Richens heads to trial for murder. Attorneys are interviewing locals to fill a jury that will decide her fate. She's pleaded not guilty. The Camas Valley mother and former real estate agent is charged with murder in connection with the fentanyl overdose death of her husband, Eric Richens, almost 4 years ago. She wrote a children's book about grief before being charged with his murder. The case has garnered state, national, and international media attention, so much so that jury selection began with the debate about closing the process to the public. Attorneys representing Utah's Fox 13 News argued to keep the proceeding open while allowing jurors the chance to speak to the prosecutors, defense, and judge in private. The logistics of that are complicated by the fact that jury selection is now conducted through video conferencing and not in person. Judge Richard Mrazek agreed to keep the courtroom open to the public, but said he would clear it if jurors felt like they needed to speak about sensitive matters in private. The questioning is meant to determine whether a prospective juror can be unbiased during the upcoming 5-week murder trial. Questions are typically follow-ups based on each person's responses to a written jury questionnaire. Jurors were asked Tuesday about personal circumstances similar to issues that will be discussed at trial. Prosecutors and defense attorneys went back and forth with questions before asking Mrazek to excuse or keep someone in the pool based on their answers. The prosecution asked many questions about potential jurors' attitudes toward law enforcement. Richens' attorneys asked about interest in true crime content and what potential jurors had seen in the media about the case. Jury selection is scheduled until February 18th, or attorneys have enough people to seat 8 jurors and 4 alternates. Corey Richens' trial for murder is scheduled from February 23rd to March 26th. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, coming up on Friday, February 27th, the National Ability Center and Park City Mountain teaming up to provide the Friday Night's Light Ski-a-thon. In the studio with details, I have the CEO of the National Ability Center, Willie Ford, along with Park City Mountain's Vice President of Mountain Operations, Chris Ingham. Good morning.
Good morning.
Willie, why don't you start and tell us a little bit about the ski-a-thon. Is this the first one you've done?
This is the first one we've done, yeah. As you said, it's February 27th. It's our community event for the winter. As you know, we've got the Summit Challenge in the summer where 1,000 cyclists come out to support our mission. This is to bring that same type of energy and enthusiasm for what we do onto the mountain.
Okay, so give us the details. When, where, how much?
Yeah, February 27th at the McGrath Mountain Center will be our home base, right at the base of Park City Mountain by First Time Lift. It's $50 to enter. If you don't have an Epic Pass, it's just $10 more. Park City Mountain and Vail Resorts Epic Promise is being really gracious on making that easy. So February 27th, 5:00 at the McGrath Mountain Center, $50 to enter. Go to our website. If you don't have an Epic Pass, we'd still love to see you. It's $10 more.
Okay. And so what does that ticket price include?
It includes access to ski under the lights. We'll have some great opportunity drawings, we'll have some music, but most importantly, it's just the community coming together skiing under the lights, which is not that common of a thing to do these days. So let's get together and have fun on payday.
Okay, so Chris, again, this is something that you guys saw, I think, a pretty successful turnout for opening ceremony on February 6th with a lot of family members coming out to have spaghetti and ski under the lights. So something that the resort kind of considering now for special events?
Yeah, it's been a really cool opportunity for us to provide some skiing under the lights, a little bit of a legacy item for Park City, something that we did a little bit in the past. And now I think it's a good opportunity for us to evaluate how do we provide a cool experience for local members of our community. And kind of these good examples to support nonprofits like NAC or just one-off events that would be really exciting for locals in Park City.
Yeah, because I think you have one more planned that's in
correct.
March.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, we have one more later this winter in March, early March. Last week's was really exciting. A bunch of families out there, a lot of young kids smiling, happy. You know, there's something about being under the lights that I think is just really unique for folks.
Okay. So is that probably going to be it for the year, just the three, or thinking about some other opportunities as well?
Yeah, I think for this year, that's probably what we're going to look at. And then, yeah, I think it's a great opportunity for us to see how do we provide something like this for the community in the future.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you get some feedback?
We did. A lot of really positive feedback. A lot of happy people.
Okay. So, Willie, this is actually a fundraising event like your Summit Challenge. So you're kind of asking people to put together those fundraising teams?
Yeah, exactly. So if you sign up and you want to join us, you go to our website and you start a team. And the real spirit behind it is a community-based fundraiser, so lots of small donations make a big difference. So you go, you sign up your team, and you can start door knocking in your neighborhood or ask your friends or family for small donations to make your impact greater. So we've seen great success with this at the Summit Challenge and some other events that we do. So. Hopefully we'll be doing this for the years to come, and as time goes on, the community will get more involved.
Yeah, and so, Chris, I think everything that's raised that night actually goes to NAC. The resort's kind of doing it through their Epic Promise Foundation.
That's correct. All proceeds will go directly to the NAC, and Epic Promise Foundation's enabling us to host the event.
Yeah, and you kind of, I mean, because you got staff out there, right? You're going to have lift attendants, you're going to have ski patrol. What else is kind of required to pull something like this off?
Yeah, kind of for us run-of-the-mill operations stuff, right? We've got lift maintenance, ski patrol, lift experience with scanning and operations, and then a bunch of support from our guest services teams and some of our management teams as well.
Okay, so it takes a crew.
Yeah. And then, you know, big shout out to the food and beverage teams that always help us out in those events as well.
Yeah, okay. Let's see, any plans for the money that you raise? Does it go to something specific or just kind of into your general fund?
Yeah, so this year, in the spirit of how the NAC started, it was started in 1985 with a $3,000 grant to support wounded military and having access to the mountains. Over this past year, our military federal funding has been under pressure. We've done a great job as a team to kind of bridge that gap. But the spirit and the use of these funds will be going to support our military programming at the NAC.
Yeah. Can you tell us how much you've kind of lost as a result?
We lost about $450,000 to a federal grant that we've had for 15 years.
Oh, that's tough.
It's tough, but our community came together and we've nearly bridged that gap. Through some new donors and some loyal donors, because the importance of what it, you know, getting military out in the mountains and doing our programming is so important. So the community once again rallied together to make sure that we never say no to a participant that is in need.
Okay. Chris, I know that the opening night ceremony was limited to 500. Is there a limit on the ski-a-thon?
That's a good question. 500 is our rough number that we're tracking, but through the great generosity of Park City Mountain and Vail Resort Epic Promise, if we're coming up close on that max, we'll communicate to Chris and team and we'll see what we can do. A lot of it will have to do with things at the time, but I'm confident that if we have more than 500, we'll be able to support.
Awesome. All right. What do people do to register?
It's really easy. Go to our website, nationalabilitycenter.org. You'll find the event, sign up, tell your friends, and then most importantly, show up with your skis or snowboards And get ready to have a great time. And, you know, this would never be happening without Park City Mountain or Vail Resort Epic Promise. I just want to give them a big shout out. 100% of the proceeds we raise is going right back in our operating budget. So it's a big deal, and can't thank their generosity and support enough.
Okay. Up next, just want to mention you've got the Red, White, and Snow fundraiser happening. Is that
this? First weekend of March. So we have a busy end of February and busy early March. Yeah. So we've got, as the community knows, it's a big four-day marathon, Red, White, and Snow. A couple of our events still have some tickets available. Uncorked is one of them. Wine on the Mountain is another. But that's another thing. If you're interested, you should go to our website and check it out because it's right around the corner.
Okay. Willie, Chris, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Lizzie.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, Park City High School's head football coach, who's known for his mentorship, has resigned from his post after a decade. KPCW's Christine Weller reports he's moving to Brighton High School.
Josh Monsingo spent 13 years with the Park City High School football team, first as an assistant coach, then as head coach. In that time, he became one of the most successful coaches in Miners history. 82 victories, 4 region championships, and 3 playoff appearances at Rice-Eccles Stadium. Monsingo also helped the Miners transition from a 3A to a 5A classification while maintaining a championship standard. Park City was moved from 5A to 4A during the 2023-24 school year. Monsingo didn't have a traditional start in football. His father wouldn't let him play in Little League, so he first got on the gridiron as a high school freshman.
Didn't know anything, trying to figure out how to put the pads in the pants and which way was up and down, and was a little undersized as a freshman, so it was a big awakening, but also sparked a passion in me.
He said he loved the competition, physical, and team aspects of the sport. Monsingo went on to play in college and knew he wanted to stay involved in football after graduating. Coaching was the logical next step. He moved to Park City after his wife began working as a cardiac anesthesiologist at the University of Utah. Monsingo was then hired as an assistant coach at Park City High, and after 3 years became head coach. Eli Alford played for the Miners when Monsingo was the assistant coach, and during the first year, he led the team. Alford said as a coach, Monsingo completely transformed the football program. He said Monsingo emphasized camaraderie, which brought the fun back to football. Monsingo also took a personal approach to coaching.
He would coach every player specific to what their needs are, and I think people responded so well to Monsingo because we all knew that, you know, he cared for us more than just as a football player. He really, truly cared for us as people.
Alford was one of 45 athletes Monsingo helped move on to college play. Inspired by Monsingo, Alford went on to play at the University of Montana and is now coaching football at the University of Mary in North Dakota. Monsingo calls his approach transformational coaching. He wants to help his students succeed in life, not just on the field. He said he's demanding as a coach, but never demeaning, making sure to build players up rather than breaking them down.
Although there's plenty of yelling and screaming and winning games and having fun, it's more about investing in their lives and showing that you care, showing that you're there for them.
Monsingo is also known for being a sneakerhead with a special affinity for Jordans.
I have a problem with the sneaker app, and if there's a good drop, I'm going to go grab them. And it's kind of a thing every game night, what shoes am I going to be wearing?
One of Monsingo's favorite seasons at Park City was in 2019 when the team made it to the state championship game after an undefeated season.
We kind of had come full circle from where we had started to, you know, almost no one in the stands and no expectations of us to even do anything, to be a dominant team for an entire year, the stands to be packed beyond belief, the support was incredible.
Monsingo was quick to thank those who made his tenure so successful. He said Park City has a lot of talented football players, which makes him, quote, look smart as a coach. He also thanked all the assistant coaches who often volunteered their time to the team. Monsingo will finish teaching at Park City this year, then take on the head coach job at Brighton High School. He said the decision was one of the hardest he's ever made, but he wanted a new challenge.
While it was time, and I'm excited for the new opportunity, this place will always have a piece of my heart forever, and I'm forever grateful for everyone who poured into our program and supported me.
Park City School District's search for a new head coach to lead the Miners has already begun. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, for 40 years, the Park City Education Foundation has financially supported teachers and students through classroom initiatives. Formally organized under 8 signature initiatives, the foundation recently streamlined its work into 4 focus areas. After an 18-month review, the foundation cut its signature initiatives in half from 8 to 4. The foundation supports more than 100 programs each year with the nearly $2 million that is raised locally. Vice President of Advancement Jen Bellow says the change was about simplifying the message and sharpening the focus.
The first one of those is personalized learning, and that is really meeting students where they are. And then real world learning is another big piece of what we fund. That was one of our signature initiatives, and that just continues to grow. Elevating educators is our third one, and so we've always wanted to support our educators. And then the fourth one is closing the opportunity gap, and that is every child, every chance.
Billow says that many of the programs fall under more than one initiative, allowing the foundation greater flexibility to direct the funding where it's needed most.
It gives us a lot of flexibility, and I think it's much clearer for people to understand what we fund, and which in turn we hope will make it easier for people to understand what they're giving to.
The initiative support preschool and after-school programs at all 4 of the elementary schools, fund elementary art education, and provide support for Bright Futures, a program that helps first-generation students earn a college degree. They also include classroom and express grants for teacher-led projects. Well, a Utah Republican lawmaker has introduced a bill that could excuse college students from coursework that conflicts with their religious beliefs. The Salt Lake Tribune reporting Representative Mike Peterson introduced House Bill 204, which will create a process for, quote, belief accommodation. Under the bill, students at 8 Utah's public colleges and universities could object to required assignments on moral grounds. In most cases, professors would need to accommodate requests by excusing participation or offering an alternative option. Peterson proposed the bill after his daughter, who is pursuing a master's in social work outside of Utah, was required to write a letter to a local lawmaker advocating in favor of pro-LGBTQ policies. The measure passed the House Education Committee in an 8-to-1 vote, with the only Democrat present voting against. 6 members were absent. The bill is now in the full House for consideration. And Utah Governor Spencer Cox says the United States is still a very welcoming place after global concern about the country's political direction. The Republican governor faced pointed questions from European media in Milan yesterday as he promoted the 2034 Winter Games returning to Utah. The Associated Press reports Cox was questioned after some USA athletes faced backlash from President Donald Trump about comments on American politics. One of those athletes is Utah free skier Hunter Hess, who was asked Friday how he felt representing the country during the Trump administration's heightened immigration enforcement. Hess replied that he had mixed emotions and said, just because I'm wearing the flag doesn't mean I represent everything that's going on in the U.S. The next day, Trump said online Hess's comments made it hard to root for him, and he called Hess a real loser. Utah aerialist Chris Lillis, figure skater Amber Glenn, and alpine skier Michaela Schifrin also shared views on recent political actions back at home. Cox chided international media outlets for asking U.S. athletes questions beyond sports while adding, quote, I love that we get to live in a country where people get to speak their minds. The Utah governor acknowledged that there are political issues to be worked through over the next 8 years before the Olympics return to Utah in 2034. The Milan Cortina Games end February 22nd and before the 2026 Paralympics begin March 6th. Joining me now on the phone with an update from Heber Valley Chamber is Public Relations Manager Jessica Turner. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning.
Hey, is it snowing in the Heber Valley?
Oh, you better believe it, and we're thrilled.
Oh, good. Okay, it's about time.
I'm on team winter. I hope it continues until, I'd be happy if it continued through May. We certainly need it.
Yeah. Okay, well, why don't you run through some of the community events that you've got coming up?
Happy to. So, you know, those dairy farm tours continue over at Kohler Creamery, which is the Heber Valley Artisan Cheese. They, back in 2025, of course, they compete each year for annual and national cheese awards. So coming up tops there again. They do those dairy farm tours every Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. Would have been great to do, although with it being snowing now, you might pivot and do some of the other events that we have coming up. So we've got several events at the library. The Wasatch County Library in the last couple of years has really stepped up a lot of their free public programming. I won't rattle them all off because we don't have enough time and there's just too many. But they've got everything from kids programming to reading clubs to therapy dog time. They even do puzzle races. They do Try Something Tuesdays once a month. This month it was ukulele, learning to play the ukulele. So check our website at GoHeberValley.com for the full events calendar. You can see all of those library events, but all of them being free to the public. Also, Valentine's, it's here yet again this Saturday. We've got several things happening throughout the Valley leading up to and including the day of Valentine's Day. So if you're having a hard time finding reservations or finding something to do with that special someone or that group of gals, check out our website. We've got a lot of Galentine's events, everything from the folklore to special wine trains and Galentine's trains at the railroad, course dinners, spa nights, and a La Marche event happening at the Dainty Pear, which is exciting. It's their first year to do that. Up next will be tomorrow from 6 to 7 will be a hand-rolled truffle class happening at Ritual Chocolate. They do these periodically. They try to introduce some fun programming into the community. They ask for an RSVP via their website in advance just so they have a head count on product, but it is an opportunity to get up close and understand the complexities of chocolate truffle making, and who better to teach that than our very own Ritual Chocolate here in Heber Valley. Grand Hyatt Deer Valley is going to be offering some live DJ and opera experiences every Friday and Saturday from 2 to 6 p.m. throughout the ski season. So if you're skiing Deer Valley or just looking for something to do to fill that Friday or Saturday afternoon that has a really nice upscale opera experience, consider heading over to the Grand Hyatt if you haven't been over there yet. It's a beautiful property, with Deer Valley East Village, of course, still being under some heavy construction as the new hotel properties and the base of that East Village portal continue to be constructed and come online over the next few years. New to our area is the Black Rock Event Center up at the Black Rock Mountain Resort. Now, this is an indoor enclosed ice sheet that is home to the Park City Pioneers team and the Utah Outliers team. And they've got some get-home games coming up, including one in 2 days at 7 p.m. and for the Park City Pioneers, and then Utah Outliers will be February 18th, also at 7 p.m. I've gone to a couple of these games for the Outliers. I haven't caught the Pioneers yet. I'm telling you, it's fantastic. For the Outliers, tickets are $20. You can't hardly beat that. The concessions are really affordable. It's a great friends night out, family night out, or even a date night option if you're looking for something to do. The ice runs really well, and it's exciting to see local hockey teams duke it out against regional partners. So some other bigger competitions that are coming over at Soldier Hollow on the southwest corner of our valley is going to be the Grand Tour Cross Country Competition on Saturday, Valentine's Day. It's an all-day competition. Of course, I'm sure that they are super thankful for the snowfall because everything they have over there has been man-made. They've done a phenomenal job, though, covering the trails, preserving the course. They are open for public Nordic skiing and biathlon opportunities. If you are interested in learning a little bit about biathlon, especially right now during the Winter Olympics happening, there always seems to be a spike in interest in the sport. Head on over to Soldier Hollow. The trails are running really well. The next competition will be the Biathlon Championships over at Soldier Hollow, and that will be February 20th through the 25th. A couple other things of note include, of course, the return of the Princess and Pirate trains at Heber Valley Railroad, the next one being February 21st. Those always sell out early. They've got several coming up, so if this one's sold out, check for other dates. New, though, to the railroad is a wine tasting train. They're going to do the first one of those on February 21st. From 7 to 9 p.m. They did get an alcohol service license, so they're able to allow guests 21 and up onto this train. They do wine tasting with food pairings, everything from a sweets plate to cheeses, local, of course, from Heber Valley Artisan Cheese. It's some new expanded offerings over at the railroad, and we're really happy to see them provide this upscale, more train experience. Then there's a film screening with Warren Miller coming up February 24th. That'll be at Grand Hyatt. It is a free event, so check that out. It's called Snowciety. I know that like Deer Valley is also helping promote this film screening. It's gonna be a pretty big deal. Grand Hyatt being the base for that film screening location. And then a wine dinner coming up at Grand Hyatt on February 25th. So lots of things just in the month of February alone. And those are more of the community and tourism based events. They're open to all people. Learn more at our website at GoHeberValley.com. And if you'd like, I can touch on some of the chambers that we've got going.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right. First and foremost, we're thrilled to help share the news that our executive director of our Chamber Tourism and Economic Development Office for Wasatch County, Dallin Kosher, will be headed to Italy to help understand and observe the Olympics happening over there, specifically for some of the cross-country and the biathlon and even some of the Nordic combined events, just to gather a deeper understanding of how those Olympics are put together behind the scenes and then polished for the visitor and viewer experience. He will be there, headed out later today through next week. So he'll be there for about 6 to 7 days total. He's going with the International Olympic Committee, or the IOC's Observer Program. We are thrilled as a community to be able to send a representative that could be boots on the ground and also have access to a lot of the behind the scenes operations so that we can better prepare ourselves and our destination at Soldier Hollow for, of course, 2034, when Salt Lake City will be the host city for those winter games. So fun news there. If you've got any questions on that, please direct them our way. We're happy to field those. And Dallin couldn't be here this morning, of course, because he's hosting Donuts with the Director this morning. It's a every other month event that we offer free at our visitor center. It's about an hour long, and it's a casual and candid conversation with Dallin so he can understand what our residents and businesses across the Wasatch Back are experiencing, seeing, questions they may have, where we get a seat at a lot of these tables that oftentimes are closed door. We're happy to share information that can be released publicly and help spread awareness and fact-based information throughout our community. So after Donuts with the Director this morning, he will be finishing whatever he needs to do and then heading out for Italy. A couple other things, we've got Peace House reception. So the Park City Peace House will be coming over to the Safe In House Gallery, which is a new high-end art photography gallery done by Andrea Bear, who's a local photography artist. That will be held today from 5 to 7. So if you're looking to support a good cause, which of course is the Peace House, and see that beautiful art gallery space, come on over. Our next mixer, After Hours Mixer, which is free to residents and businesses, will be held on February 25th. From 4 to 6 at Cossago. Cossago has a new space located on Heber City Main Street, right next to, in between the existing business of kind of the OG Cafe where they were. We've got a new business coming in there. And then to their other side, Granny's, a staple stop throughout the Heber Valley. So come to that, register in advance just so we can have a head count. But beautiful new storefront. He's done a fantastic job with the remodel of that space. And then working with Park City Chamber, we've got the next Wasatch Back Business University. This is a data-driven decisions class, will be held March 4th. So just add that onto your radar, save the date. And then our next combined Park City Chamber Business After Hours Mixer will be held at the Utah Olympic Park, the UOP, on March 5th. Another thing to add to your calendar. Our next luncheon will be State of the Valley on March 17th. And then looking a little farther out, just to help spread the word, will be the Community Expo in April, and of course, the return of the Wasatch Back Economic Summit at Grand Hyatt in May. So a lot of things to keep on your radar and kind of add to your calendar.
Okay, Jessica, appreciate your time.
Whew, absolutely, thank you.
That's, again, Jessica Turner with the Heber Valley Chamber. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, about 20 Park City residents, students, and chaperones will travel to France this week to participate in a sister city exchange. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the exchange has been going on for now more than two decades.
Every 2 years, almost 20 Park City High School students visit Courchevel, France, for a 10-day family immersion program. Exchange board member Tina Quayle said Courchevel and Park City became sister cities in 1984 by forming a formally recognized partnership. Sister city programs connect communities from different countries to foster cross-cultural understanding and friendship.
They became an Olympic venue in 92 and us in 2002, and it kind of makes me teary-eyed now to think that here we go again in 2030 and 2034. So you really couldn't have a better marriage in terms of a sister city.
Park City and Courchevel first began the student exchange trips about two decades ago. Park City High's Maisie Banger is one of the students participating in the 2026 exchange. She's been learning French for 5 years and is taking advanced placement French this year for college credit.
My brother participated a few years ago, and he talked very highly of the program, made me want to go as well. And I also just love the French culture. I've been around it since I was a little kid, so it's very exciting.
Banger is excited to live with a French family in Courcheval during the trip and improve her French speaking skills. The program also features daily programming, including about 5 days of skiing. Students will travel to France on Thursday. Their French counterparts will visit Park City for 10 days in July. Christine Weller, KPCW News.